Right now, most churches are planning their budgets for 2009. Your church can support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. by joining the Issues Etc. 300. We're looking for 300 congregations to include $1,000 in their mission or advertising budgets. Find out more about the Issues Etc. 300 on the sponsors page at issuesetc.org. Don't miss your congregation's budget deadline. Download the flyer and present it to your congregation today.
I've come to know this God of love who loves me as a gay man. And now God is leading us to the full inclusion of gay and lesbian, bisexual, and transgendered people.
It's very hard trying to do the Lord's work in the city of Satan.
Make no mistake, as someone who used to teach constitutional law, I believe deeply in separation of church and state.
The first Reformation was about belief. This one needs to be about behavior. It's not about creeds, it's about deeds.
Deeds, not creeds. In other words, we're going to stand before God now on the basis of our works and prove thereby that we're Christian.
They say that they should be seen and not heard, these children. Well, on Sunday morning, consider yourself blessed if you have a congregation that's full of little kids, even if they're crying or making noise. They belong there. We're going to be talking about children and worship for the next half hour of Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in on this Tuesday. It's the 28th of October. For the next 2 hours, you can join us, 1-877-623-6943, 1-877-623-MYIE, or email us right here in the studio, talkback at issuesetc.org. Pam Nielsen will be our guest for the first half hour. Then Dr. Matthew Phillips of Concordia University, Nebraska, my alma mater, will be our guest. We'll talk about medieval monasticism. You really can't understand the Reformation, and this is Reformation Week. You can't understand the 16th century Reformation without at least a basic understanding of monasticism and its place in the life of the church and what the reformers made of monasticism. Dr. Peter Scare will be our guest. Today, the church remembers Simon and Jude, little known disciples, but we'll talk about them nonetheless. And Dr. R. Scott Clark will join us for the last three segments of the program. The Emergent Church, he's written recently on it in a book called Reforming or Conforming, Post-Conservative Evangelicals and the Emerging Church. That's the lineup for today. Our phone numbers again, 1-877-623-6943, 1-877-623-MYIE, or talkback at issuesetc.org. Deaconess Pam Nielsen is a regular guest, senior editor of Sunday School Youth and Family Materials for Concordia Publishing House. She joins us to talk about children and worship. Pam, welcome back.
Hi, it's great to be back. How are you today?
I'm doing well. And you?
I'm doing great. It's a beautiful fall day. Chilly, but beautiful fall day here, isn't it?
It's my absolute favorite time of year, hands down.
Yeah.
I mean, I like each season for its own reason, but this is the one that's got them all beat. It's just the way it ought to be year round.
Yeah.
Okay. The last time we talked, you made a great case that the kids belong in church, that the little ones, the middle-sized ones, that all the kids belong in church on Sunday morning in the divine service. So if we're going to have them in church, do we need to, for lack of a better word, kind of dumb things down to their level so that they can get what's going on?
No, I think dumbing anything down is not a good idea. I think we can do some things and put some things in place to help lift children up to the level of what's going on. And we talked last time and, you know, underscore again today that what's happening in the service, in a liturgical service with the responses, with the flow of the service, the readings that connect to each other, with the hymns that connect to the readings, with the sermon that comes out of the readings, even the prayer for the day, all of that all helps to make a central message for that particular worship service. And that comes out in many different ways through the elements of the service. So there's a lot to inform a child, an adult, anyone sitting there. We've also got the colors and the church year, perhaps banners. Is it a communion service? Is it not? All these things help send a message, and we don't dumb down, but we help interpret these things, I think, for children and give them ways to understand what they're going to be experiencing.
You have made the case, I think, several times, that maybe the best place to put the kids in church on Sunday morning is up front, which is counterintuitive to the way we've thought about children in church. Why is that?
Well, because there's so much to see. Church is not just something auditory. It's not just something we hear. There are things going on, and especially in a liturgical service, almost every movement, whether we sit, we stand, what the pastor does, where he's standing, whether he's facing the altar or facing the people, all of that has meaning, and there's constant movement and things happening up front, and it's up front that the center of the service is, because that's the place of the word from the pulpit. It's read and preached from the altar. We receive the Lord's Supper. If the font is up front, that too, all these things, baptisms going on. So we have this activity, the central focus, where the sound comes from and everything, up front. So we want children to be able to see and watch it, because as they watch the pastor move and do the things that he does, that helps inform them as well. And if they're standing in the back, all a little child can see is the backside of tall people. And that's pretty boring after about 5 minutes. And, you know, children need to see and hear to kind of keep their focus and attention.
What they're going to see and hear is completely different from anything else that they see or hear or experience during the rest of the week. I mean, it's unfamiliar if you compare it with what they see on television or what they're going to see at their big brother's soccer game or all those other exciting events in their lives.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a disadvantage?
No, I think it's a great advantage that when they come into God's house, that it is different than the rest of life. From the very way we have the church designed, that there's something up front, that only certain people go up there at certain times, that there's a pastor leading us who's dressed in special robes. You know, I know this guy. He doesn't dress like that all the time, only when we come here on Sundays. The altar is appointed with beautiful candles and cloth, and there's special color. If it's a communion service, there's special dishes. And all of this says to a child, this is a unique and holy time. It's set apart from the rest of my life. It's not like anything else. And that alone, for a child, is of interest. This is something different. And we want them to think that. We want them to get that this is different. We speak of the worship service as heaven on earth, God coming down, giving us his gifts, giving us a foretaste of the things to come, as we sing and say in the liturgy.
Okay, in our society, we have kind of ironically a very low regard for children, but also, at least in the marketing world, a very high regard for them, at least what we focus our attentions upon. And a lot of things in society are catered toward children. I mean, people who stock the shelves at grocery stores know exactly how to attract the attention of little kids at their eye level. It's all kind of basic stuff. So is this what you're talking about for Sunday morning, reworking or rethinking Sunday morning for kids?
Well, I think we need to rethink, rework how we involve children in the worship or attract their attention. And it's not that we change the service, but that it's we make some things maybe a bigger focus or give them more light on them than we have in the past. And, you know, the first thing, getting kids up front so they can see. But, you know, there's a reason for the colors, and so we want to teach the colors that go on the altar, and they go with the seasons of the church year. And then kids will start looking. Oh, it's red now. It was green last week. Wonder what that means. It signals to them. If we put banners that have symbols on them and words and simple messages, children will pick up from that meaning and understanding about what today is about. What they hear in the music, the tone of the music, especially if you have an organist who interprets the hymns and the time of the church year in his or her playing. All of those things we want to be intentional about, not just for children, but for the whole people of God. There's so much richness that comes out of the historic way that Christians have worshiped and that pastors are moving around in front with care, and that their movement has meaning and purpose beyond just a whim of today, what they're feeling like doing, but that, you know, when they face the altar, that's a clear signal to everyone that they're speaking on behalf of the people to God. And when they face the people and they speak to them, that they're speaking on behalf of God to his children. You know, those kinds of intentional things. One of the most beautiful things that happens in our church, our pastor, after he consecrates the elements, he holds up the host and the chalice. He turns around and holds them up for us all to see and says, "The peace of the Lord be with you." I think that's what he says. I'm just always taken by what I see there, and I think, oh, this is great, because he's been consecrating the elements with his back to us because they're there on the altar. Kids can't see what's going on. Now he turns around and he holds that up, and they see it, and it's just beautiful.
Folks, it's Tuesday, October the 28th. I'd like to hear from our listeners on the issue of children and worship. Share your stories with us. Deaconess Pam Nielsen is our guest. Our call-in number, 1-877-623-6943. 1-877-623-MYIE. You can email us right here in the studio, talkback@issuesetc.org. When we come back, we're going to talk about the repetition, the familiarity of the divine service, and how this is tailor-made for children and how they learn about what's going on there.
Teach your children well. Their father's hell did slowly go by.
On behalf of the staff of Issues Etc., thanks to each and every one of the more than 7,600 who signed the online petition to bring back Issues Etc. Pastor Wiley James Smith, Pastor Weinkopf, George Cook, Dave Daly, Christopher Soike, Pastor Carl Holabaugh, Mr. and Mrs. Paul Bremer, Scott Slaughterbeck, Diane Schrader, and Marilyn Slaughterbeck. Thanks for your support. Have you been hungering for a richer life of prayer and meditation on God's Word? Well, Concordia Publishing House is pleased to bring you Treasury of Daily Prayer. It's coming in October. To experience Treasury of Daily Prayer, click the book cover on our homepage, issuesetc.org, or you can order an advance copy of Treasury of Daily Prayer by calling Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040, Treasury of Daily Prayer.
Educating a new generation of Lutherans, you're listening to Issues Etc.
Did you know that you can listen to Issues Etc. 24/7? Check out our website, issuesetc.org, and click on-demand audio. Listen at the gym, in your kitchen, in your garden, on your iPod, your computer, or in your car. The technology may be new, but the truth never changes. Issues Etc. On-demand audio, available for your convenience at issuesetc.org. 10 hours of new programming each week. issuesetc.org, and click on-demand audio.
We know that many congregations are putting together their budgets for next year. Please consider adding the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. to your congregation's mission or advertising budget for 2009. Simply go to the sponsors page of our website, issuesetc.org, and find out more about the Issues Etc. 300. We're looking for 300 congregations to donate $1,000 to Issues Etc. You'll even find a one-page flyer that you can hand out. Thanks for your support.
Oh,
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking with Deaconess Pam Nielsen about children and worship. It's Tuesday, October the 28th. Pam, before we go on, Concordia Publishing House has a new children's worship folder. It's a resource for kids called Growing in Worship. Tell us about it.
Oh, I'd love to tell you about it. Growing in Worship is truly a brand new resource. It's a four-color worship folder that you can give out to children when they come in to church on Sunday mornings. It's targeted for the 5 to 10-year-old child who's kind of that early reader struggling to get all the words. And it's really a piece not to distract them from what's going on in the worship service, but to draw them in and to help them feel like they're part of it and that they get what's going on. And so this beautiful little folder has the color of the day, and it tells them today's color is green or red or blue, and it's got a picture of the gospel story, and then it has even the collect of the day, which is, you know, often a very adult-worded prayer that we say in our churches. The pastors pray on behalf of the people, and the collect is broken down using story pictures in the rebus format so that some of the words are made easier to understand. And then there's a few questions after the prayer to get them thinking about, well, what was it we really just prayed for? On the inside of it, every week, the gospel is there printed for them, and difficult words that are hard for a young child to understand are highlighted. And then in a side column, those words are defined with the context of the gospel in mind. And then there is always an activity, a do, for the children to do that helps them understand the point or thrust of the gospel reading for the day. And it could be a little puzzle. It could be something they draw. It could be a maze. Any kind of activity that our writers could think of that would help a little child get the focus of that gospel reading. And then in each issue is a section called See, and that always features something that they're likely to see in church and helps explain it. And often that See has a connect to the focus of the day, to the gospel. But one week it might be explaining the robes that pastor wears. Another week it might be explaining a symbol that they might see, like the Agnus Dei, or explaining different crosses, or talking about baptismal fonts, or who knows, things that they're likely to see. And on the back of it is a week's worth of quick and easy things for families to do to carry on the conversation that flows out of the Sunday gospel reading to help them keep focused. There's some activities, things to talk about, things to pray about, to keep that going all week long as a family. So that's the essence of this new worship resource, and we think every congregation ought to order these. They're a great price, 15 cents a Sunday per child, and they really will help not only children, but as I've shown them to people, adults have said, well, I'm going to learn things from this. I didn't know this is what that meant. I didn't know that's what that represented. So it's full of really interesting things that help inform our faith.
Folks, you can find out more about these new children's worship folders, Growing in Worship, under the on-demand page of our website, issuesetc.org, or you can call Concordia Publishing House, their toll-free number, 1-800-325-3040. Ask about Growing in Worship, 1-800-325-3040. Pam, the conventional wisdom when it comes to kids on Sunday morning is that it's got to be different every time. You got to keep them guessing what's going to happen next, spontaneous and, or at least appear spontaneous. Let's talk about the familiar, even the repetitive, that is found Sunday after Sunday, and how this really is an advantage for kids in worship.
Well, that's really true. Children, particularly young children, need and desire routine. They find comfort and safety in routine. So when they and you see this if you walk into a preschool classroom, preschool educators know this. They have a routine for the day. It's the same each day. The children know what to expect. They know where to hang their coat. They know where to sit when the day starts. They know what's going to happen. And that eases them. It brings them peace and calm. This is a familiar place. This is a place I know. And now you translate that into the church where they're coming in, and it's a place where there's lots of big people and often people they don't know because they're too little to have gotten to know all the people in church. So that in itself can be a little intimidating. And so when you bring them into the church and you have an order of service that we follow each week, and some parts of it we say and sing the same every week, that helps a child feel like this is a place I know this place. This is a place for me. When they see Pastor up front and he's always dressed in these special robes, they connect and there's a comfort in that when they see him up there and they know that he's representing God to them. And even in our order of service and the things that we do so much the same, there's plenty of variety to capture their interest, variety in what we sing, in the theme of the day, the sound of the music, the colors, the prayers. There's lots of things changing, and yet they change with order, and that's really good for children. And any educational research will underscore that child development, they need order, and they need the comfort of that.
In that vein, Jen from Virginia emails us. She says, "We're emphatic about attending services where there is a liturgy. My boys are all under 7. I have 3 so far. They've gone since they were conceived, and they all know the rhythm of the liturgy. My almost 7-year-old was able to participate rather fully in church last week when we were blessed to visit Fort Wayne Seminary with some friends. He was saying out, at the top of his lungs no less, all of the parts of the Vespers service that he knew, and there were plenty. We even had an occasion where my mother, who is a rare attender of church, was telling my niece and nephew, non-attenders, that the bread and wine were given by the pastor to remind us of how good Jesus was. My well-catechized son leaned forward and said, 'No, it's the body and blood of Jesus given and shed for you for the forgiveness of sins.' Where did you hear that? And he actually said it twice because she tried to say it was a memorial of Christ's good life even after he had said this the first time. We've walked out of church when we've been told that the boys belong in the cry room. They weren't even making noise. The repetitive is what teaches them the word and the liturgy." With only about a minute, your thoughts on Jen's email, Pam?
Well, I agree completely. That's the other part of it. The repetition in a child's life is a teacher. Repetition is a teacher to us. So over and over again, a parent helps a child fold their hands at the dinner table and prays the same prayer, whether it be "Come, Lord Jesus," or something else. Soon, that child knows that prayer, and that's their table grace. When they come into church, that repetition helps embed those things onto their hearts, onto their minds, and they internalize them, and they have them there at the ready, not just for now, but for a whole life as a child of God. And those things that they've learned become a become richer with meaning as they grow in their faith and as they understand more. So you teach them these things. Sometimes they don't even understand it, but they learn them from the repetition, and as they grow up, they grow into them in deep and wonderful ways.
With only about a minute for a response to Gary's email in New Jersey, he says, "Does giving a children's sermon give the impression that the regular sermon is not for the children?" Only a minute for a response here, Pam.
Well, I think it certainly could give that impression, and I think if you're doing a children's service, you want to do it with care, and that you help children understand perhaps that this children's message is to help prepare them to understand what's going to happen in the sermon, and that this is just like this little worship folder, it's a tool to help you boys and girls know what the point of today is. And, you know, if a pastor says, now listen for these words, I'm going to say this word over and over again in the sermon. I want you to listen. Give children some handles to focus on what pastor says. That is 20 minutes of, you know, an adult speech can be hard for a child to follow. So I think children's sermon is a prime time to prep them and give them some ways to listen to the sermon.
Deaconess Pam Nielsen is senior editor of Sunday School Youth and Family Materials for Concordia Publishing House. Their new worship resource for children, it's a worship folder for children called Growing in Worship. You can check out these new worship folders, Growing in Worship, at issuesetc.org. Click on demand, issuesetc.org, on demand, or call Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040. Pam, thanks for being our guest again.
Thanks so much. Have a great afternoon.
When we come back from this break, second part of this first hour, we're going to spend talking about something very, very old, ancient, in fact. Now, we tend to associate what the Western Church usually called holy orders, that is monasticism, a fancy word for people who devoted themselves in their lives, their study, and their practice wholly unto the study of God's Word. Well, it got a little abused in time in the church's history, and it's the negative we focus on. We'll be talking about the history of medieval monasticism with Dr. Matthew Phillips of Concordia University, Nebraska, after this.
A voice in the wilderness of American evangelicalism. You're listening to Issues Etc.
On behalf of the staff of Issues Etc., thanks to each and every one of the more than 7,600 who signed the online petition to bring back Issues Etc. Mark Stolzer, Sarah Smith, Aaron Filipek, Andrea Mashman, Pastor Herb and Faith Miller, Theodore Cook Jr., Matthew Barker, Maria Burfiend, Lynette Barker, and Joel Oberdiek. Thanks for your support.
Issues Etc. is listener-supported. That means we rely on you for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Hi, this is Todd Wilkin. Please consider making a gift to Issues Etc. today. You can donate online, issuesetc.org, or by check, Issues Etc., Box 1046, SJC, California, 92693. Box 1046, SJC, California, 92693. Thanks for your support of Issues Etc.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, Executive Director of Life Issues Institute.
This presidential election has shown us America's in a cultural war. The viciousness and animosity is at an unprecedented level, and much of it has to do with moral social issues like abortion and same-sex marriage. This election, more than any other, reminds me of Matthew 10:35. Jesus tells his disciples, he didn't come to bring peace, but a sword. For I have come to turn a man against his father, a daughter against her mother, a daughter-in-law against her mother-in-law. A man's enemies will be the members of his own household. Now think about how this election and differences on key moral issues have affected people you know or your own family. Whatever moral view wins on Election Day will take our nation with it. Please make sure you vote.
Life Issues. Stay informed. More informed than you've ever been.